T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. What's happening, Mike? How are you?
Hey, what do you say, guys? How you doing?
Good. Is Robbie Gould available or not?
Well, he said it's complicated. I'll defer to him on that. Look, here's the thing. Long-term deal with a franchise tag player has to be done by July 15. Doesn't matter whether it's with the 49ers or anybody to whom he would be traded. Step one, sign the tender. Step two, get traded. Step three, sign a long-term contract before July 15. Now, I guess in theory, he could sign a long-term contract with the 49ers and then be traded after that. But unless a long-term deal is done by July 15, it becomes very difficult for him to be traded. And the 49ers seem to be content to just rely upon him to show up at kick. They're betting on the fact that when it's time to collect his franchise tag money 1 week at a time, you can show up as late as Labor Day weekend like Le'Veon Bell did a couple of years ago. He'll show up, he'll kick, and then after this year, they make a decision about what they're going to do in 2020.
How much of this is are teams not willing to give anything up, really, for a kicker that's as expensive as he has? How much can the Niners rest confident in that?
Well, look, how much do you give up for a kicker when there are, in theory, so many of the guys out there who can kick? Now, the problem is the Bears aren't finding any of them. And that's really what Ryan Pace is going to have to ask himself. Would it be worth it to, number one, offer some sort of trade compensation, number two, pay Robbie Gould what he wants, when the difference between the best kicker and an average kicker may not justify that additional expenditure of draft pick compensation and cap dollars and cash? So, you know, they're going to have to figure that out. If he's even available, I mean, you know, the 49ers may just think, hey, look, we're only going to pay this guy in the range of what, between $4.5 and $5 million for 1 year. We're happy to do it. Kicker position's taken care of. And next year we'll worry about what we're going to do with Gould or somebody else in the position.
You just added to your website this story that just popped. Tyreek Hill is meeting with the NFL today. What are we going to find out? What's going to happen?
Well, today is just that first step where Lisa Friel, the special counsel for investigations, meets with him, talks to him about the various potential violations of the personal conduct policy. And several potential violations are on the table. Threats made to Crystal Espinal, the mother of Hill's 3-year-old child, the possibility of his discipline of the child that crossed the line, and also the circumstances surrounding the removal of the child from the custody of Hill and Crystal Espinal. All three of those things could be deemed to be violations of the personal conduct policy. For now, it's an investigation. If Hill has to go to New York at some point and meet with Roger Goodell, that's the precursor to an announcement of discipline. I expect all of that to be finalized by week one. The question is, what will we know when it's time for Tyreek Hill to go to training camp? But right now it's looking like he'll be at training camp. It's looking like he'll be available for the preseason. The question is, how many weeks is he going to miss once the regular season starts? And look, I don't rule out anything here because of his history that he was never punished for by the NFL. The admitted choking and beating of Crystal Espinal back in December of 2014 while she was pregnant. Now, I guess there's a chance the NFL, horrified by that, sufficiently disturbed by what's happened more recently, just says, you're taking a year off. You're gone. Mm-hmm. You're done. And we'll see you in 2020.
Do they have a protocol for this established, or are they essentially able to do what they want? I'm wondering if after talking with Tyreek Hill, the NFL's investigation can go back to law enforcement or child services or whatever to verify things, or are they done with that portion of their investigation?
I think they do whatever they feel like they need to do to get to the point where they're satisfied that they know what happened. And remember, they're operating on a much lower standard of proof than would apply in a court of law, than would apply in a criminal case. Beyond a reasonable doubt, no. It's more like probable cause, or more likely than not. We saw that standard result in Ezekiel Elliott, the 6-game suspension a couple of years ago. And he never got an opportunity to confront his accuser. The woman who accused him of wrongdoing was interviewed at least 6 times by the NFL. And when it was time to have a hearing, they didn't make her available. And there's been some flaws in the past in the investigative process and in the actual litigation of this. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of fans out there, especially Cowboys fans, that remember very, very clearly what the league did to Ezekiel Elliott based on evidence that they regard as flimsy, and he got 6 games. They are going to be very interested. I have a feeling Ezekiel Elliott and his representatives are going to be very interested to see what happens with Tyreek Hill, because we've heard his voice say, "You need to be terrified of me." And last year, Jimmy Smith, the Ravens cornerback, was suspended 4 games for making threats and engaging in emotional abuse at the mother of his child. And there was no physicality involved there. So he's already done enough to be suspended. I think at this point the question is, how long will the suspension be? But to answer your question more clearly, they basically can do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And they have a track record of doing whatever they want to get to wherever they want to be.
Since we spoke last, Mike, the NFL has finalized the rules regarding the challenging or not the inability to challenge certain pass interference calls. How did it eventually end up, and how just is this?
Well, here's the thing. If you look at what the competition committee has done, it points you in one direction. If you listen to what the accounts are coming out of the meeting last week that Al Riveron, the senior VP of officiating, had with employees of NFL media, it goes another way. Because Al Riveron shared with those folks a couple of plays that aren't as clear and obvious when it comes to pass interference happening or not happening as they need to be to justify replay review overturning the ruling on the field. And my concern is that Riveron is going to take this too far. And you guys remember what happened a couple of years ago with catch, no catch. Zach Miller's last career catch should have been a catch, and Riveron overturned it. I think that someone, and that someone is the commissioner, needs to say to Al Riveron, no, Al, we're not going to go back and go frame by frame for pass interference. This is only there to correct those clear and truly obvious situations like Mikel Roby-Coleman of the Rams running across the field and blowing up Tommy Lee Lewis of the Saints before the ball arrives. This isn't, well, he touched his arm, but did he significantly hinder? I don't know. No, it's only got to be something where you throw a flag when you look at it and you say, oh my God, how did these idiots miss it? And I think that's what needs to happen. And I think that could happen, but you know, it may be like last year. We go through a couple of weeks of the preseason with the helmet rule and realize what a debacle it's going to be. And then maybe that's the point where Roger Goodell starts clunking heads together like Mo Howard. But at some point, the guy who's making $40 million plus per year needs to get involved. Otherwise, the 100th season is going to be marred by this constant reviews during the final 2 minutes of the game. And who knows, it's going to be a crapshoot whenever Al Riveron has a chance to decide whether or not to overturn rulings on the field.
See, Mike, I'm terrified of that opportunity for the NFL to vacillate back and forth between actually using the rule that they've made and not doing it like they did with quarterback hits last year. Because with quarterback hits, you, on the other side of not calling it, you have, you know, the fan base that's incensed, our guy got hit, why didn't they get the flag? But also a fan base that's like, well, this is football. This is like, now we're back to playing it the way we want to play it. It's hard. There are hard hits, all that kind of stuff. There is no other side when you start to backpedal on this interference call. All you're going to see is the missed opportunity of your team, and there is no historical background. There is none of that that's going to make it, that's going to mollify a fan base that's so angry about the missed call in the first place. They're poised on the edge here. They could really screw this up if they try and backpedal it after a couple of bad weeks.
One thing the commissioner needs to do is apply foresight here and project what it's going to be like when they start playing these games and when fans are keenly interested, either by their rooting interest for the teams or their fantasy football interest or their gambling interest, right? Every time there's a pass and there's any type of contact between defensive back and receiver, we're going to wait. Oh, is there going to be a review? Is there going to be a review? Oh, what's Al Riveron going to do? Oh, maybe we'll get lucky here. Maybe he'll see something we don't see. Maybe there'll be this. Maybe there'll be that. And it's going to be so arbitrary because you know, you got 17 different replay officials who are going to be the gatekeepers for initiating automatic replay review. Now, the coaches can throw their red challenge flag if they choose to, but I think ultimately, right, they have emphasized there's got to be clear and obvious evidence that there was significant hindrance of the receiver. And I think that, you know, it's like I've raised the question, where's the line, right? There should be no line. It's either absolutely clear and obvious. It's a guy getting blasted, a guy getting blown up. I remember Thanksgiving game a couple of years ago, Stephon Diggs of the Vikings got just blasted out of the blue as the ball was coming in, right? That's the kind of thing you want to be able to fix. But you don't have this, well, he touched him, but did he significantly hit? No. It's got to be those situations where everyone, they say 100 drunks in a bar, it's got to be 1,000 drunks in a bar, standing up in unison saying, oh my God, they screwed that up. Anything other than that, don't touch it. And that's the challenge, because if they start down that path, you're right. Where does it stop? How does it change rooting interest? How does it drive people crazy? And you're going to have more fans feeling like they got screwed because this new mechanism was either used against them or it wasn't used to their benefit when it could have been.
Well, I thought he'd start getting into dram shop statutes and everything else. It's some part of this new law. Now, but see, this is football, though. I'm at the point as a fan, as an avid football fan, where when something happens, no matter what it is, there is that moment of, did that just happen? Is it going to unhappen in the next 5 minutes? And it's changed the way I consume football because, you know, there's only whatever they say it is, 12 minutes of actual action in those 3 hours anyway. And now anytime something happens, I'm waiting for a flag, I'm waiting for a replay, I'm waiting for what I just saw to not have been real.
And I agree with that, but here's the difference. When the question is, did the receiver have 2 feet down or did the ball come out before the runner's knee hit the ground, we get the satisfaction on the back end of seeing whether or not the ruling on the field was correct. But with this was there contact? Did it significantly hinder? Watch the play from Super Bowl 53 when Brandon Cooks is running to the end zone. Stephon Gilmore grabs his left arm, but Cooks pulls through the contact and still gets his hands up into the traditional universal over-the-shoulder catch formation. He still has the chance to catch the ball. He only drops it because Daron Harmon is closing in from Cook's left and is about to blow him up with a legal hit. And how is that even remotely similar to what happened in the Rams-Saints-NFC Championship game? And now Riveron is meeting with media people saying this would be overturned by replay review. That's the difference. The difference between objective and subjective. And if you're going to start having replay review for subjective calls, for judgment calls, it's got to be clear and obvious that that judgment was horribly exercised. It can't be close. It's got to be something like we saw in the Rams-Saints game. Otherwise, you don't touch it.
Mike, appreciate it. Great talking with you, as always.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio, and he's brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras, plus applicable tax, no additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
I wish I didn't feel like we were on the edge of disaster with the NFL every freaking season. You know, we're right there. They're making rules as they go. They're completely reactionary after the end of a season. And in order to correct something that was so obviously missed and can't happen that way all that often, they've now created this rule that they have no idea how to enforce or litigate. It's a nightmare. It's a potential nightmare. Why? Why do they do this every year with such a great sport? How could they possibly do it?
Well, because the getting it right now, in when you have gamblers and when you have casinos and gambling houses.
So money. That's the answer. The answer is money. I get it.
I think it's part of it. I do. I think now that it's all out in the open. You know, the Cubs are going to be sending Yu Darvish to the mound tonight at 7 o'clock. They're going to be opposed by Dallas Keuchel, who was in the news just as Craig Kimbrel was for a long time for not playing baseball because no one would sign him. And it seems that when reporters were around the clubhouse yesterday, he was really eager to talk about his offseason, to talk about what's going on.
Did he want to use a major marketplace to make a point?
I think maybe the fact that he's in the middle of Chicago, he's kind of, hey, anybody wants to talk to me about my free agency? I've got some things I'd like to say. And he said them to Jared Willis of the Sporting News.
can't blame him for speaking out. We will get to those things and how they have affected the Cubs' acquisition of Craig Kimbrell and the Braves getting a starter that's going to go tonight against the Cubs. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670, the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Yu Darvish takes the mound tonight at Wrigley Field against Dallas Keuchel, who, like Cub-to-be soon Craig Kimbrell, was sitting around on a couch trying to keep himself in shape at a local high school and find somebody to catch him while he was unsigned. And it's common now for veteran free agents to not get the big bucks until teams can wait until the time where they don't have to surrender compensatory picks to sign them. And Dallas Keuchel in Chicago wanted to talk about this stuff. And our guy Jared Willis, writing for the Sporting News, found him. And one thing Keuchel said to lead off, he said, "I could talk about this for hours." Oh, I bet you could.
Yeah, I would imagine.
He's had plenty of time to formulate some ideas on all this, and he gets it. And extensive comments here. And he says it's just a stalemate. He said no one's thinking about free agency when free agency hits. They're taking their sweet time going to winter meetings, GM meetings. There's major league talent ready to be signed, and owners and GMs just taking vacation, saying, "Hey, we'll get to it in a couple weeks." He said in the history of the game, this has never happened before. Not just one guy, but a couple guys. It was talked about early on. We were hoping it wasn't going to happen. And he said teams have become overly enamored with different qualifications for being a Cy Young winner, World Series champion. He said teams like velocity. Teams expect exuberant spin rates. So that's part of it. Measurables, obviously.
Exuberant spin rates. That's a good phrase.
Exuberant, not irrational exuberance.
No.
From
no,
Alan
no,
Greenspan,
no.
Just exuberant spin rate. And he said, it's all great and dandy, but guys have to go out and perform at the big league level for that to translate over. And not a lot of guys do that. You're seeing more throwers up here than you've ever seen before. And he notes how guys like Ozzie Albies, Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson, guys are taking contract extensions that are probably less than market value offered early. And he just puts it in three words, because they're nervous. It's been very sneaky. He said they've really kind of gone around the rules. Now, this is as close to he gets as actually alleging collusion. And I've always used the term soft collusion or gray collusion, because that's really
light treason.
It's light treason. That's what this is. We all know what's going on, but you certainly can't prove anything because there's no smoking guns here. So he said, if there's the possibilities, when asked, what do? So you pay guys earlier? Do you blow up our arbitration? You make free agency more like the NBA or NFL? So the fact of the matter is, teams are calling up younger players. Talent level's still the same, but they're cheaper. So if one guy doesn't produce, hey, next guy's just as cheap. Let's try him out. There's so much control from teams with young players. Why would they want to change the system where they can milk every dollar out of a player? So we're not being greedy. We want fair compensation. Ultimately, it's talent that's driving ticket sales.
So there's a couple of things here. One, and it's an opportunity, not necessarily an obligation, but an opportunity that Major League Baseball as an entity, because of its labor relations with the union itself, is kind of let go by the wayside. And it's not criminal, but it is really annoying as baseball fans. And here's how I'll lay it out. Today, this afternoon, the White Sox play the Red Sox. It's Chris Sale, by the way, for the Red Sox on a getaway day. Do you know where the Red Sox are headed next?
I believe they are headed to the Bronx.
They're playing the Yankees, but they get the next 2 days off, and then they're in London.
Oh, that's right.
To play the Yankees. This is the London series. On Saturday and Sunday, the Red Sox and Yankees are playing the first major, I believe it's the first major league game ever in London. They're going to baseball is so daggum interested in expanding the game to every corner of the earth that they can, that they're going to London to play a baseball game in a stadium that may or may not be ready for baseball. I have no idea, and neither does Rob Manfred, the commissioner of the sport. I'm sure they'll get it there over the next couple of days, but I don't know if it's there ready to go now. They are so focused on expanding this game to every single place they can and generating revenue in every way they can. And yet, the one thing that they don't care about doing is constructing an offseason the way other sports have given a blueprint to do it. The NBA, the NFL, both of those sports have their fans obsessed with off-season headlines day in and day out that generates revenue and interest and new fans, and baseball refuses to do anything to change the agency of what's going on this off-season and to make people interested in what their teams could do. Instead, every single fan of the White Sox, of the Padres, of anybody who is going to sign someone, maybe save the Phillies because their owner promised to spend stupid money, every fan was throwing their arms up going, well, I don't know, it's not going to be today, but maybe we'll sign somebody in June.
Which leads us to the second part of the Dallas Keuchel commentary in the sporting news. There's a lot of parity in the league because there are a lot of terrible teams, Keuchel says. People talk about parity. It's just because teams suck. Now, wait here, okay? You see, some of the teams in the league, they're making renovations to the ballpark. That's their money being put back in the team. It's not being spent on salary. It's being spent on renovations to the stadium. The fans like the renovations, obviously, because they're nice. A new restaurant comes in this or that, a new Budweiser deck or something like that. But they're getting tricked because there's not more talent on the field. There's not more major league talent. Some of these teams don't even care about that. He says, we're going to have our hands full the next couple of years trying to figure out how to get this ship right and back to a situation where this is going to happen again and players are compensated fairly. So he's on to something here. And Joe Sheehan talked about it yesterday.
Yeah.
Jonah Carey has been sounding the alarm on this. The idea of teams hiding behind payroll flexibility, whatever one of these euphemisms you want to use for not trying to compete now or not trying to spend on getting the major league help they need now. The Cubs can't really say that because you can't be urgency, 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 and then not go get Craig Kimbrell.
That's right.
But they waited. How many of those games could Craig Kimbrell? How many of these during this 14 and 18 stretch?
If it's one,
right.
It matters.
Right.
If it's one, it matters. They're on pace to win. The Cubs are on pace to win 88 to 89 games, something like that, and win the division while winning fewer than 90 games for the first time since Joe Maddon came in 2015, and they made that run into the NLCS against the Mets and then got their doors blown off. But still, an incredible season, and that led to a World Series championship. You've got a team that... Did you know... Patrick Mooney wrote this up. Beat writer covers the Cubs. Did you know that the Cubs are 6-1 against the Marlins, the rebuilding Marlins? They're 6-1. So you go ahead and take their record, 43 wins, subtract the 6 against a horrible, horrible team, and they're a game or two over 500. You take out games against really bad NL East squad, and you've got yourself a 500 team. Like this is this is where you get to urgency. This is where you get to what the best idea for the long term. It's where you get to the roster as it is. Listen, Daniel Descalso was added to kind of give some impact and power to this team. He's been anything but that. And I feel bad for Daniel Descalso, but at some point a question has to be asked. Is Daniel Descalso making this team more likely to win its 89th or 90th game? Or might a guy like Robel Garcia, who's down there in AAA and hammering the baseball, give you a chance at winning that extra game? Those are tough decisions that a stacked lineup needs to make, that a deep roster has to make, and those are ready to be made now. I mean, you've got an opportunity prior to this All-Star break without a deadline that allows you to get waiver trades the way it has for decades past. You've got this opportunity in front of you and tough decisions to make.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion. Chicago Wolves would like to thank all their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you and see you in October. And this segment is brought to you by Patrick Cadillac. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, we're going to be having a conversation about these things and all sorts of stuff. Roster construction, everything that's going on with the Cubs as they're just kind of grinding through this part of their schedule with general manager Jed Hoyer. He is going to join us today at 11. We're going to get all the latest on some Cubs to be and some possible Cubs to be. Our guy Alex Cohen, the voice of the Iowa Cubs, who's a good broadcaster and a very solid scout when it comes to analyzing the talent that he describes.
You mentioned grinding through. June has been 12-12 on the ledger for the Chicago Cubs. They've won 6 of 7. They had a 6 of 7 stretch Remember this at the beginning of June? They won that makeup game against the Angels on a Monday, I think it was, and then it was two against the Rockies and then a sweep of the Cardinals. Their losses, though, that was the June began losing two to the Cardinals. It was a total sweep, but the first game was in the month prior. 1-2 against the Rockies, 1-3 against an incredible Dodgers team, and then you split a series against the Sox, and nobody needs to remind anybody listening how disappointed Cubs fans were in losing that first game to the White Sox, given where both teams are at. Then you came back and beat Lucas Giolito and kicked yourself off to an okay run here against a pretty good Braves team and split a series against the Mets. This is the middle. This is just kind of right in the bleh of the Cubs season. And in order to get out of that, you've got to do what? You've got to make decisions. You've got to force the roster, I guess, to a more impactful one. And instead of, you can levy some criticism toward Joe Maddon if you want for just trusting Mike Montgomery to get you through as much of that game as you could. On the other hand, I don't know if Adbert Alzolay needs a piggyback. This is how you've kind of constructed this rotation here to get you through a Kyle Hendricks injury that's got you a little bit more hamstrung than I thought it would when it happened.
Speaking of Joe Maddon, he's going to be on these airwaves at noon. I had to push him back a day. He's going to be joined by he and Lawrence Holmes. We'll have their regular Tuesday conversation today at noon. So we're going to ask him all this stuff then. I thought his description of the bad play last night was perfect. What did he call it? A trifecta of negativity where everything possible went wrong.
You lose the chance to score any runs. You record two outs on the base paths, and instead of getting Alzolay away from the lineup, you've got to lead off with him the next inning because he bunts through and there's two outs. That's just getting punched in the face.
As I'm watching it and I'm listening to Len Casper sort of realize everything sinking in as it's happening.
Oh, God.
It's like, well, he's in a rundown and they tag him out, and there goes Wilson Contreras and he's out, and that's a double play, and Alzolay is going to lead him the next inning. I'm like, oh, that was just a gut punch. And it was weird for me because I've got this odd issue with the way my DirecTV is set up where I can get Comcast Sportsnet Plus on all the TVs except my main TV. So I have to run down the basement to watch the Cubs, then I have to run upstairs to watch the White Sox.
Sure.
And of course, my wife and daughter were demanding I make homemade carbonara, so I had to get everything. And the timing on carbonara is critical.
Oh,
so
it's
you can
crucial.
Get the temperature
you gotta
right.
You cook the egg with the noodle. In. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I was up and down and up and down and up and down. It was like a Fawlty Towers episode.
With your knee, too. I mean, it's not been
knees,
an easy up and down.
Plural.
Oh, it's plural now?
Well,
I
got the reconstructed one, and now I've developed some kind of condition in the other one where I went and my doctor said, okay, I have good news and bad news. He said, the good news is you're not a surgical candidate and everything looks okay. So the bad news is that you probably have begun a degenerative arthritic condition. Like, okay, awesome.
Cool, great.
Go Bears! Right. Good talk.
Get out there.
Right.
This from the 847, you don't take teams off the schedule. You play your schedule. The Brewers are 2-9 against the Marlins, Padres, and Giants. What does that make them? Fair point. I don't mean to take wins away from the Cubs, just to point out that within run differential, as much as that means to a team over the long haul, within run differential are teams you're playing against. When you've got a league that's as stratified as baseball can be at times, given some particular teams, the American League has six good teams, six and a half good teams, and the National League, when you get to the very bottom of it, when you get to the very bottom of baseball on either side, they're garbage squads. They're terrible, just really awful baseball teams. That deserves pointing out, in my opinion, but in no means do you get to take it away. The Cubs are a good team. They have the talent, and they ought to win this division. Can you get farther in a playoff run? Do you want to melt down and have a bullpen destruction like you did against the Nationals 2 years ago? Or would you rather kind of make some of these aggressive moves and put some of your hotshot rookies into positions they've not been in all that comfortably, like the bullpen with Alzolay?
Well,
I'd rather do that.
That's the best news for the Cubs. If you look at the Baseball Prospectus playoff odds, the best news for the Cubs is they currently have a 65.1% chance of making the playoffs, in large part because their projective systems don't really like the rest of the division as far as the Brewers, Cardinals, Reds, and Pirates. In their estimation, kind of a tallest midget division in which the Cubs have the best chance to win it, but they only have a 4.6% chance of winning the World Series, when a team like the Astros has a 21% chance of winning the World Series, and the Los Angeles Dodgers currently have a 1-in-4 chance of winning the World Series.
They are an exceptional baseball team.
1-in-4. Now, who do you think the highest-ranked American League team is?
Oh, it's got to be the Astros.
The Astros are at 21%. The Yankees at 10.4. The Minnesota Twins have an 8.1% chance of winning the World Series. The Minnesota Twins.
8.1.
They're doing some things.
Yeah, they are.
That is a modern baseball team lifting the ball, and they also have a pitching staff that has created some stuff.
I mean, Kyle Boddy is essentially working for the Twins at this point.
At least
that's how it feels like. Derek Falvey comes over after working with him at Driveline and takes over the GM spot. I asked for a little while, maybe the first month and a half of the season, whether the Twins pitching was for real. I think you've got that answer kind of squared away. And whether you're the Indians or whether you're the White Sox, you got to look at that Minnesota Twins organization from top to bottom.
Yep.
Really ask some questions about where you're headed and how good you need to be.
Yep. And if you look at video day in and day out and you follow Pitching Ninja or some of these other spots, how many of those individual crazy pitches that you see, whether it's the laminar flow or the horizontal breaking slider with that spin axis, how many times is it a twin?
A lot.
Whoever it may be, they're doing things the way you're supposed to do them, and it shows in their record.
Midday Midway's coming up. Got a story from the NCAA that will make you cry. We're going to talk about bees, and a badass rocker has exhibited his traits.
Is it Kumar Rocker?
It's not Kumar Rocker, although that guy's fantastic.
We've got a great story of justice done. We have a badass woman in Pennsylvania, and we also have a very, very lucky man in Minnesota finding something he never thought he'd see.
Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
First half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1-2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3-4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5-6-7-8.
Our objective is Midway.
9-10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Talked a lot about last night's baseball game, tried to figure out how this roster's going to look when guys are healthy and returning and or called up, and how they're going to fit these pieces in, and what's going to reflect proper urgency for a team that's won only 14 of its last 32 games, which really is not enough. They have to pick up the pace. They've got to tighten it up because it can't look like it looked last night. Talked a lot about that. Had a football conversation with Mike Florio, and we got into the extended comments made by the pitcher that the Cubs are going to face tonight in Dallas Keuchel about a broken MLB system regarding not just the timing of free agency, but teams not spending money to actually, you know, try to win.
Going to keep it sportsy on our first midday story. Don't usually do this, but this feels like something we're probably going to get to during the NCAA football season, but I wanted to bring it up now. This is from USA Today. Dan Wolkin covers the college football nonsense really well. The NCAA is going to tighten transfer guidelines and limit players gaining immediate eligibility.
Why?
The NCAA Division I Council is expected to approve a package of new guidelines that could make it more difficult for college football and basketball players who want to transfer to receive immediate eligibility. The council is scheduled to meet Wednesday in Indianapolis. They're going to review updated guidelines and directives, which in many cases appear to specify and narrow the circumstances in which athletes should be given waivers and raise the documentation requirements to obtain them. Compliance staffs at Division I schools were made aware of the proposals. They're not rules, Wolkin writes, but they're essentially a set of directions for a committee. So we're going to make this even more subjective for kids who want to leave their schools and go to better opportunities where they can play the sports that they have scholarships to play. Nowhere in this does it mention any kind of rules for coaches.
Yeah, limiting coaches' movement, right.
No, nothing like that whatsoever. So there we were on the cusp
of allowing kids to just, you know, seek education and opportunity for employment in the sport that they play, or just to have a better circumstance for themselves as they're going to school and getting an education and playing a sport which has ludicrous demands on their time just to keep on a roster, and the NCAA, which is nonsense and outdated and criminal, is going to make it harder on them to do the thing that they're trying to do. Good on you. Well done. Top notch.
A Pennsylvania woman used a shovel to kill a cobra she saw slithering on the patio of her apartment.
I'm sorry, you said Pennsylvania?
I said Pennsylvania and a cobra. Kathy Kehoe said the squawking of some blue jays outside her unit caught her attention Monday when she looked outside and she saw the 4 to 5 foot long snake. The 73-year-old Kehoe said she noticed the lateral spot commonly found on cobras, grabbed a shovel, and nudged its tail. When it rose and spread its hood, she realized it was a cobra.
Nope.
That's when she decided to kill it.
Nope.
I knew that what I was doing was dangerous. I'm not a fool, she said. I just acted. I thought of the kids and the other people in this community. I thought, I can't let this thing get away.
Think of the children, Dan.
Now, wildlife officials say people who spot snakes should call police and let experts handle the situation. It is indeed, from the picture, clearly a monocled cobra.
A monocled cobra.
Yeah.
I don't know what's the difference between that.
On the back of the hood is a...
It's wearing a monocle.
On the back of the...
It plays a lot of Monopoly.
Old trap. No, but on the back of the hood is what looks like an eye.
Okay.
A couple concentric circles there.
All right.
They are 5 out of 5 as far as aggressiveness, as far as the danger of the venom.
Oh,
it's not only a neuromuscular toxin that can stop your diaphragm from working, it also causes necrosis around, like flesh eating around the wound.
Not necrosis.
And they go out of their way to bite you. They're incredibly aggressive, incredibly peevish, nasty little buggers. They come from Thailand. And this is my
favorite. How big are they? Are they really big?
Up to 6.5 feet. This is my favorite paragraph. Her apartment complex in Fairless Hills, about 30 miles northeast of Philadelphia, is the same one where officials removed 20 venomous snakes from another apartment in March.
No!
Wait. Officials aren't sure if the cobra had escaped from that unit. I'm pretty sure. You know, I don't want to tell you how to do your jobs, but I think that if you're really trying to look at Occam's razor here and figure out the most likely way that a cobra is in the same apartment complex in Philadelphia as the apartment where there were 20 other venomous snakes.
You got to guess.
I think you got to guess it probably was.
A little breaking news perforating the midday midway. It seems Kevin Durant has turned down his $31.5 million player option. That from Adrian Wojnarowski, of course, to the mothership. He is going to go. Kevin Durant is. He is going to go free agent. You know Tom Morello is, right?
Rage Against the Machine guitarist.
He is the guitarist for Rage Against the Machine. I guess he's also
social activist.
Prophets of Rage. Yeah, he's the guy who's very outspoken. They played the DNC, I don't know, back a number of years ago and made a whole mess of things as I guess they were like representing anarchy at the time or something like that. But what happened at a concert just a little while ago, and Morello responded to it, has got Morello in just a little bit of hot water on Twitter. I'm actually backing Team Morello on this. What happened was Rage had a bunch of fans up on the stage, right? For, you know, the Guerrilla Radio. I think they were closing their set out with that. And as he's walking through that guitar riff, you know, that really bad... I mean, every Rage guitar riff is badass, but he's walking himself through that with the pedals and all that kind of stuff. A fan, and this was apparently let known to those fans who got up onto the stage, no selfies. Don't bring the cell phones out. Not here. Not now. We're not doing
Is this like Rob Halford of Judas Priest? He literally kicked somebody's cell phone out of his hand all the way to the back of the arena?
So Morello's playing, and you know how that riff has a little space in between it, right?
Right.
And in the dead space, he grabs a fan's cell phone and just chucks it into the crowd.
Nice.
He's gotten flack for this, but he said on Twitter, when you invite guests to your stage and clearly tell them, if you stick a phone in my face, I will throw it, and then their uncontrollable, entitled selfie urges overcome their sense of reason, they get their effing phones thrown. Morello laid it down, and it should be known, the fan got his phone back a little bit later. So, settle down, you're all fine, and badass rockers, keep on being badass.
Do you remember the story of Pinky the Flamingo?
No.
At Busch Gardens?
No.
I think we did this this story somewhere, somehow, on these airwaves. We mentioned it, that Pinky the Flamingo, in August 2016, and Pinky, famous flamingo at Busch Gardens, he delighted Busch Garden patrons with dance moves. He was one of the theme park's animal ambassadors. Well, there was a man, Joseph Corral, who showed up and grabbed the bird by the neck and slammed it into the ground. Just killed Pinky.
Whoa.
Badly injured. And then Corral said he was trying to show off for his daughter. He said he didn't mean to injure the bird by slamming it into the ground. But then they told him that the bird had to be euthanized because it was all broken. He was jailed for 5 days, released on bail. And the animal people went crazy and demanded justice for Pinky. Well, they got justice. Joseph Corral was struck by a pickup truck while crossing a busy road near his home in Orlando, walking north across State Road 50 when a Ford F-150 heading east hit him, and he's dead. So,
That ended much faster than I thought it was going to.
There you have it. And this was at the time he was about to stand trial. He was declared competent to stand trial. The trial date had been set for August. And here's your AP kicker here. Prosecutors have filed a formal notice that they've dropped the criminal charge upon learning of his death. So, which is nice of them. So this
we didn't want to go through the paperwork.
This lunatic that murdered the flamingo just got flattened by a pickup truck. So all is right.
Speaking of trucks, did you know that there are still cowboys driving livestock across America in this year, 2019?
Actual cowboys?
Sort of. They're not really tracking cattle across anymore. They're actually driving bees north. This is what's happening, you know, because obviously global warming is affecting bees.
Right, they're moving
migrations.
They're making incredible amounts of money, and we did a story about the guy's bees getting stolen. Remember the one of the guys?
Yeah,
that
was a bee theft.
One of the guys there was a heist.
It was
one of the guys
heist.
Carrying bees had all his bees taken.
So you'll love this. There's a new movie out. It's called The Pollinators. I think it's getting released over the next week
so,
and it's about literal cowboys. Well, technically, I guess. That are taking bees, loading them up into trucks, and driving them to places where bees no longer kind of like live. They've migrated away from them so that these things can pollinate other plants and keep the whole system running. I had no idea that this was going on or that we needed to do it in the first place. But
it's called Pollinators?
Yeah, The Pollinators is the name of the movie. I'll send you the link. I'll tweet it out. Maybe you're into it. I know you're into bees, for God's sake. I know you're into bees.
Lastly, to Duluth, Minnesota. I got a lot of my money in Duluth, Minnesota. A walk in the woods has taken a Duluth man back 7 decades. This from WTSP.com. Ray Ulvey said, "Not what I expected. I was shell-shocked right there." The 88-year-old, he makes diamond willow canes, and he was searching a woods near his home for a branch out of which he could make a cane. Instead, he found a piece of his past. He said, "I seen that round thing in the mud there, and I thought it was a snuff can. I picked it up, and it was a hockey puck with my initials on it."
What?
An RU had been jackknife carved with a left-handed cut on both sides of the puck by a young left-handed teenager. Okay. He said, "That's how I made my U all those years in school, even. I was flabbergasted. How could something like that be sitting right there, and I walked up and just about stepped on it after 70-some-odd years? It's unbelievable." He couldn't wait to get home to show the puck to his wife, Sonia. And so Sonia said, "I must have gone to 10 houses so excited about this puck, carrying it with me in a napkin. I couldn't share it with any of his buddies because they're all dead."
Oh, no.
The name of the puck's manufacturer can still be read. Made by Winwell Corporation, located in California. Said, "Still in business." Said, "I got an email that said our products last a lifetime, and there's proof." He isn't sure how the puck ended up in the woods. The neighborhood rink was a block away, and his slap shot wasn't that good. He does know it was special to him. He said, "My dad wouldn't pay a quarter for a puck back in them days."
Wow.
"And you had one that followed you and had to last all winter." So a puck that he lost more than 70 years ago, he nearly stepped on while walking in the woods at age 88.
That is the Midday Midway. Alex Cohen, he's the voice of the Iowa Cubs, is going to join us on the other side. We will check in on what might have been Craig Kimbrell's final Iowa rehab start. We'll check in on some other players that could matter for the Cubs down the stretch as well. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.